This is Wildcat Chris Harris, one half of America's Most Wanted. You are listening to Live and In Color with Wolfie D.
Hey, this is Jimmy Street, host of the Live and In Color with Wolfie D podcast. Hear the life and times of professional wrestler Wolfie D. From his time in the territories with PG-13 to his time in WWE, ECW, WCW, TNA, and more. Nothing is off limits and nothing will be held back. Thanks again for tuning in. Here he is, Wolfie D.
Welcome once again to Live and In Color with Wolfie D and my man Jimmy across the street. Man, I'm still reeling. They were hanging from the rafters on the birthday episode. I'm 50 now, buddy.
I know, man. How's it feel?
Oh, well, it actually just felt like another day, but it was probably one of the cooler birthdays I've had in quite a while with all the stuff you put together and all sent messages and things like that. So, yeah, you know how it is. I mean, it's a milestone of 50. I mean, I guess it does kind of, you know, sound different. I had to make a bunch of phone calls on my birthday. Like, I was getting my car fixed, so insurance and registration, all this kind of stuff. And I was getting quotes. And what's your birthday? I'd say today, 1973. They go, oh, today's your birthday. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Kind of a cheap way to get a happy birthday out of them.
Yeah, I like that. Hey, you got to get it where you can, right? I mean, we're older people now. Not everybody's like, throw us a birthday party at McDonald's with all of our friends.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, baby.
Exactly. Well, you know, so I can't lie, Wolfie D. I've worked harder than I've worked almost on any episode on that last episode. I really did, man.
I don't know how many total that was, but I mean, getting that many wrestlers to send audio and or video clips to you is no easy task.
No. So I think it's like 24, 25, I think is what the number totaled to. And I mean, all walks of life, all time frames of your career, you know. And Jamie, I think everybody popped for Jamie's run in at the end. And we did plan it that way in a sense, except that Jamie, you know, it was all work. We had fun with Jamie.
So you worked me. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, but Jamie, you know, it was just perfect how I think everybody enjoyed his little run-in at the end. I think, you know, they had given up hope on him, and then boom, there he is. That's the wrestling business, right? That's the wrestling business. Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is there's two people that came through even later than Jamie, and I actually got them. One, I got them the day our episode dropped. Uh-huh. So, you know, and then the other one I got yesterday. and so we've got a great listener, as everybody knows, Ben Martin on Facebook, Twitter, Ben Martin 88 on Twitter. Anyway, he always asks great questions and he's been a great listener and he's always very active in sharing our stuff. And we do appreciate him. He's part of the intelligentsia crew of mine. And so he actually is friends with Sue Young, the wrestler from Impact, as you know her as well. And, you know, that's one we wanted to have on the show for a while. Well, he apparently sent her a message saying, hey, you need to get on the podcast. And we're figuring that out. But when it comes down to it, she sent you a very nice birthday greeting. So I'm going to go ahead and play that one. This will be somewhat similar to last episode. I'm just going to play it for Wolfie. I don't think he's heard this yet, but we'll play it by whatever here. So, all right, here we go. Sue Young.
Hey, everybody. This is Sue Young, and I'm calling to say happy birthday to Wolfie D. I hope everyone tunes in to Live and In Color with Wolfie D. And be sure to follow on Twitter, aka X. Bye. Love you guys.
So she's telling everybody to go to our page and follow the Twitter. And
like I said, you know this. I don't know if I said it on here, but I saw her at the Pigeon Forge convention last year, and she talked about coming on the show, but we just haven't made that one happen yet. So.
Dotted the T's and crossed the I's yet, right? Yeah. No, we'll make that happen.
Wrestlers and wrestlerettes and shit. It ain't easy. Yeah.
No, it's not. And, you know, that's one person that would have been perfect for the new church, Sue Young. Yeah, sure. Which she would have been perfect, right?
Yeah. I mean,
no disrespect to Belladonna, but Sue Young, you know, both of them could have been in the new church, you know. But yeah. Sue's like, you know, a common.
I was always a fan of Sue.
Right. Yeah, very cool gimmick. Always,
but even before that, even before she got the crazy gimmick, I thought.
Sure. Yeah, very talented wrestler. Absolutely, highly, extremely talented wrestler. Yes, and she's just definitely. I've always just, but that crazy gimmick, I can't put it over enough. Very realistic and also very original. I think, you know, that's the one thing I like about her is that I feel like she's an original. You know, so anyway, well, the next one is your old buddy and from the Smoky Mountain USWA days. You may know him as a Spider. But I think we know him as a Thrasher as well. So here we go, Glenn Ruth.
Hey, Wolfie D, Headbanger Thrasher here, Glenn. Bro, we've known each other for more than half of our lives, and I can't believe today's the day you turn 50. Hey, man, welcome to the 50 Club, and just remember, age is only a number. Have a great day, man. Love you.
Yeah, that's cool. I like the R. Kelly quote there, you know. Or was that Aaliyah or whatever? Never mind. But, yeah, age is just a number, right? But
yeah, man, sort of. Depends, man, because I don't know. As soon as I started hitting 40, all the stuff started catching up to me.
Yeah, I know, right? Seriously.
I mean, and they say that, but, like, your body surely ain't. The age ain't just a number, but and sometimes your mind ain't just a number either with your age, man. You start losing your fucking mind.
Well, you know who the kings of their body and their age and has they probably advanced themselves as far as they can go is our favorite band Kiss, man. I mean, they're the kings of it. They've been senior citizens rocking and kicking ass up on stage for a long time now. And it looks like that they've wrapped it up officially, physically, and have turned themselves into avatars. What do you know about this, Wolfie D?
I've seen a little bit of the video of the, you know, release of it or whatever. I'm just curious, is it going to be on a movie screen? Are they actually going to be like holograms on a stage?
Right.
I mean, that's what I'm interested in. And to be honest with you, it looked actually pretty freaking cool, man, with the Gene blowing the fire, not having to have a stick to do it with, you know, just coming out of his mouth or whatever.
Right.
And it kind of puts you in the mind of some of those McFarlane figures that they released of Kiss.
Definitely. Yeah. Some
of the circus ones and all that. But yeah, that's, I'm interested. You know what I mean?
I mean, I've always kind of figured that they were going to continue on just with four new guys or maybe Eric and Tommy Thayer, but then two other guys playing Gene and Paul. But
it wouldn't be the same.
It wouldn't be. You're right. I agree. So how do you, and I think maybe they were coming up on that realization.
Yeah.
And now they're like, okay, we got to do something. So.
And I mean, frankly, it's not the same, and it hasn't been for a while without Ace and Peter. But
amen. Yeah.
We kind of gave a little pass on that, I guess we did. I don't know.
Right.
I liked Eric Carr. And see, because that was a different gimmick. He had a different gimmick. He didn't try to come in
the cat. He wasn't the cat.
If they would have gave these other two guys different gimmicks, I don't know that it would have worked any better, but I don't know.
It would have felt a little less like them encroaching on territory that we respect and love, you know. But yeah.
But we'll stay on that one and see how that.
Yeah, stay tuned. Yeah, I definitely think the idea of maybe holograms is the way to go on that. But who knows, man?
I don't know what the technology is on all that shit. If you know how awesome that can be. Can they cross over each other? Can they move around a stage or whatever?
That's a good question.
How it's going to work. I'm sure it's doable with all the technology available today.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm also curious, will there be, you know, new music for these guys? Or is it going to be all the old stuff? I personally think they should, you know, go with the classics, but then also they need to do some new stuff for them.
Well, dude, when AI eventually takes over, I mean, seriously, they'll be writing their own songs and there'll be a whole generation of AI kids listening to AI Kiss, you know?
That probably will be the last AI band if this you know, does good or whatever.
Oh, no. I mean, dude, are you telling me, you know, the Beatles released a new song and
it'll bring back the Beatles.
Yeah. AI already helped out them make, you know, that song, the whole Peter Jackson taking out John's voice, something they couldn't do back in the 90s. It's right. Interesting stuff. But anyway, we'll see. Like you said, stay tuned on that and stay tuned for the AI version of Live and in Color with Wolfie D too. Right, we're long gone. So anyway,
We got a guess that he's not AI. Wildcat Chris Harris had some of my most memorable matches in TNA. New Church versus America's Most Wanted was definitely some good stuff. And I saw Chris at Slammiversary, and I feel like I saw him somewhere else too, but. Before that, it had been a while since we had spoken, so this ought to be a fun conversation. Chris is a good guy, hell of a wrestler, man.
Yeah, he is, and good guy, in a lot of battles with you, like you said. Yeah, it'll be a fun interview, and I'm glad you've got the book back again, man. Not that, you know. Not that my guests were bad. I'm just glad we've, got some guys. Yeah. So.
But, man, since we got so long-winded on Kiss and a couple of extra birthday gimmicks, thank you, Sue, and thank you, Glenn, for doing that. Better late than never.
Yeah.
We've been long-winded, so let's take a break and let's get Chris on the phone.
Be right back after these messages with the Wildcat.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey folks, to get your official Live and in Color with Wolfie D merchandise, go to prowrestlingtees.com/livewolfied. Check it out.
If you're listening to Live and in Color with Wolfie D on Apple Podcast and like what you're hearing, go ahead and leave a 5-star rating. And while you're at it, write a review. Tell us what you liked. Tell us what you'd like to hear in the future. It's very important to us and always appreciated. Thanks again.
All right, folks, we're back. And as usual, I got an awesome guest today. Somebody that I spent a lot of ring time with. Not a lot of travel time, but a lot of ring time in TNA. He is one half of America's Most Wanted, and we had one hell of a feud, the New Church versus America's Most Wanted. He is Wildcat Chris Harris. What's going on, my friend?
Man, it's good to hear from you, man. Whoopie D, or should I say Slash?
Either.
That's how... That's the guy I had some battles with.
Yes, yeah. You did. Yeah. Yeah. You never got to do all the ha ha comedy shit with Wolfie D. You had to do the fights with Slash.
Yeah, I think I came out on the short end of the stick on that one.
Honestly, man, those were some really good matches, and I feel like, you know, collectively as a group, I think that feud really helped TNA, like, kind of launch itself. You know, you feel part of something, man. You guys went on to do more than myself and Brian. For whatever reason, we didn't go when, they went to Orlando and all that. You guys did some really good stuff afterwards, but I really feel like that feud kind of helped put TNA's tag team, a tag teams on the map, if you will.
I 100% agree, man. And I've said that for years. I think we were doing our best to get established because they didn't really have anything for us in singles, so we were kind of thrown together. And yeah. You know, we've told the story many times. Miss Storm and I were just like, all right, well, if this is what we've been dealt, then let's run with it. And you guys were the first ones we got to really tangle with. And I think you know, they were, I mean, who knows what they were thinking, but, you know, hey, here's a couple tag teams. Let's let them do something and see what comes of it. And I think we really opened some eyes, man, because those matches were just, they were really incredible. And, you know, we went out there and honestly, we beat the hell out of each other. And that really got their attention. It's like, these guys are out to get it done. And, you know, they're not afraid to throw hands. And, you know, I throw Brian right in there too, man. I thanked him a lot during that time because, you know, both of you had just come off the WWE period. Yeah. And so, you know, you guys, you know, knew what it was like to be there and to do what you have to do to get noticed. And, you both really, selflessly, you know, were helping Storm and I, to take that next step. And, you know, sometimes I always wonder, because when people bring up the whether it's the famous matches or feuds or anything, you know, there's other names that are brought up. And I think because that was so early on and, yeah, you know, the eyes weren't on the product as they were later years. I just think that goes unnoticed sometimes, man. But yeah, just, I mean, if there's anybody that's a wrestling fan, they would love to see and it's not just a one match thing. It was the progression of the feud. And, yeah, it was just awesome, man. So yeah, I think it really turned some heads and we really got both tag teams established in the early days.
Yeah, I totally agree with the fact what you're saying about, you know, it was so early on in the days of TNA that a lot of people missed that part of it, man. And man, it was some good stuff. And Brian and I clicked, kind of like you said, they threw you guys together. You know, obviously we were never a team before, and we just clicked. And I think that it was actually supposed to be a 1 week thing. It was going to be they put the titles on us, and then you guys were supposed to win them back the next week. But for whatever reason, it worked out so well. It, like you said, opened some eyes. They kept the feud going, and I'm gonna call you out and Jay Storm, because what cracked me and Brian up. Do you remember? I can't remember if it was the second week or first week or whatever that they were. You know, we were gonna beat you guys again or something, and you guys were mad about it, I guess. And I remember seeing Storm sitting in the locker room with his head on his hand, you know, arms folded with his head down. Like he was pouting and stuff. Do you remember this?
Oh my God. Well, of course I'm going to say no, because that makes us look like shit, but I really don't, because I would think that I'd like to think we went in with good attitudes and we were just thankful to be part of something like that. So, the fact that we were doing something and a good program, yeah, I would think we'd be happy, but who knows, man, that some of that, you know, being new and being green and naive and just, you know, maybe you do have that kind of reaction. Yeah, it sounds really stupid now, but, you know, let's be honest, you know, that wouldn't have been the first time Storm has, he's been known to have the boo-boo face sometimes. So,
it was funny,
but, yeah, I don't know. I mean, whatever they were doing, I mean, it made sense to me, man. Cause if it was just supposed to be a 1 week thing, yeah, I mean, if we could get more time out of this, then hell yeah, I think it makes more sense to do that. And man, I really, to your all's credit, I just love the whole package deal. I thought that was one of the greatest things about those early days was the whole New Church package with Mitchell and then you had Belladonna there with you, yeah, the guys too. It just all fit, man. You guys just all made it work, made it fit.
Yeah, I enjoyed that too. I mean, obviously Mitchell, but I always thought that Belladonna brought a lot to the table just because she played the part so well. And I was kind of bummed when they let her go, you know, for whatever reason. But at any rate, yeah. So where I met you in TNA, so I don't really know where you came from, Chris. And I may just be dumb, but where did you start and all that? Who got you in?
Is that the first time we met? I feel like we met before that, but maybe not.
Maybe so.
Completely wrong.
Maybe so. I can't remember.
So I got my start. It was in the Ohio area. I started training in northern Ohio, but then I got hooked up with Roger Ruffin in Cincinnati. And Roger was kind of known for, at that time, he was he had spent a lot of years in the WWF refereeing in like the late 80s and 90s. And so, you know, he had some credibility. And just a year after I hooked up with him is when Abyss did back then. And so, you know, Abyss and I became, you know, great friends and road buddies and just in and out of the ring, best friends. And, but yeah, we were doing, we were just making our towns, man. You know, we were getting out there hustling every chance we had. We were trying to stay busy, which it, you know, I don't know if we'll get into this, but it's amazing the way the kids nowadays, you know, just, they just take everything for granted and not out there hustling. And, but we were doing our thing. And, we were doing a weekly deal in Georgetown, Kentucky. They were pretty known for wrestling there. And we had a tag match with, one of the guys was Corey Williams, who was wrestling out of Nashville.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
it was Rob, me and Rob Williams. I know you remember Rob.
You trained Corey, don't you?
Was that you?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that. Storm credits you for a lot of his training, so yep. I hope you know that. But Storm credited you for a lot of the training, and yeah, that's pretty cool that Corey came out of that. So yeah, we had a great tag match. It was him and Vic the Bruiser, me and Rob, and they went back to Nashville and was telling Bert Prentice about us. And next thing you know, we're booked in Nashville. And really, you know, made a stride there. Rob and I were, you know, the new flashy babyface team. And so that's kind of how we got hooked into Nashville and started wrestling there more on a regular basis. And, you know, the WCW run was in there. But you know, basically, yeah, when TNA was coming around, you know, we'd made our connection. So we were kind of invited in. Based on that, just, you know, just doing a lot of the work around there. And I had some great, you know, I met Storm and had some great programs with him. We had great chemistry against each other as well. So yeah, traveling around, man, making your connections. And, you know, that's how you do it. You make your contacts. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Hey, Jimmy, hot tag.
All right. Tagging in. So I just got to ask this question, man.
Oh, man, that was stiff. Got tagged in. I got stiffed already.
No, I just got to ask this question. How was it working Kurt Hennig, man?
Oh, man, it was awesome. It was, you know, it's one of those things where you're so nervous going into it. I mean, hell, it's Kurt Hennig, and you know, you want to do great, but you're just, you know, you're so friggin' nervous. But yeah, once you're in there, it was a breeze, man. I mean, he took care of me and got his stuff over, which was the whole point. I mean, people want to see his shit. I wrestled him once in WCW, which I didn't know him very well then. Right. But we did have a match in WCW. And then in between WCW and TNA, there was another promotion trying to start up, you know, there were a million startup promotions. And they had some names involved with that. And not just Kurt, but Barry Windham was there, Sandman, just, you know, just trying to get something going. So I got to wrestle him there, but I got to wrestle him in the ECW arena. So, even though I was kind of being brought up as the next top babyface, you put that kind of character in the ECW arena against Kurt Hennig, you know, what do you think's going to happen? So,
exactly.
Yeah. I had no chance. So we went out there it was one of those things where, even on the other side, you know what I'm talking about, Wolfie. I mean, you know, just being on the defensive with Kurt Hennig, you know, the pop that he's getting for his chops and, you know, man, that perfect plex, just, you know, that sets it all right there. That makes it all worth it. I mean, I could care less. I was getting my ass kicked. Just the reaction of the people was awesome. So yeah, I loved working with him. And then in TNA, we, you know, became really, really tight. And, you know, it wasn't long, just a couple years, but, yeah, I was really tight with him up until his passing. So yeah, I'm blessed to have had that time with him and to be able to share the ring with him.
Yeah, no doubt.
There's four people that made me want to be a wrestler. Jimmy's heard this 1,000 times, but it's Randy Savage, Kurt Hennig, Hawk and Animal. And I got to wrestle all of them except for Randy. So, yeah, Kurt was, was great to work with.
Yeah, man, you took that Doomsday device, didn't you?
And more than once. More than once.
He definitely did.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. And then yeah. Animal, it was one of my last matches. He let me do it with him. He put some Derek King on his shoulders, and I went to the top, and me and him did it together. I thought that was pretty
cool. Poor Derek, man.
That's yeah. Not oh, wow, man. Yeah, that has to be cool. Nice little passing there. So
yeah.
I'm sure you took it. I'm sure you took it 100 times in WWE, but I the one I remember in TNA was, I don't even think they had a match, but that run-in they did when all of us were in the ring.
Yeah.
And they had to get that Doomsday device, and good old Woofy was perched up there on the shoulder. So, and plus, I think they were probably comfortable with you anyway because they had already worked with you. So, that made sense.
Yeah.
So, was it true that you were actually introduced partially in WCW, and the thoughts of you were going to be a country singer? Is that true?
There was talk of that. I wouldn't ever say that, it was in motion or anything like that, but there was talk, and I think that gets hyped up a lot just because that, I did that country music video, which I'm not sure people remember.
It's been, for sure.
Been over 20 years, but, so I did a country music video, which I did. I got hooked up, being, part of Nashville, and the country capital of the world there, and so that was really great because that was during the WCW days and or right before WCW days. So I was getting recognized more for my country music video on CMT than I was in wrestling, and I remember just times like that where I was like, when you're starting and you've made a few years in the business, you want to be recognized for your work and for people seeing you. Do your thing. And I remember there was one time I went through a drive-thru and somebody had, one of those times where they feel like they've recognized you or something. And then they finally asked, they said, are you that guy? And I'm thinking right away, I'm thinking, they've recognized me from the wrestling. And they said, were you in that country music video? And I was like, yeah. And I remember thinking, son of a bitch, they recognized me from that and not wrestling. So, so that was pretty fresh. And, they were looking, and you got to remember this is the year 2000. So they were probably reaching for anything at those last days, but they were looking to bring up new characters. And to be honest with you, I don't know where that had gone because I'm the furthest thing from a country music singer.
I was going to ask you that. Anything. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but there was talk and to be honest with you, that was actually kind of creative. It was unique. I mean, nobody had ever debuted from a music video like that. So I was all on board. I was like, hell yeah, let's do this. It's never been done. And how many times can you say that in wrestling? So I remember having a conversation. It was with Ed Ferrara and, there was, I think Jimmy Hart was on board with this and, they were going to kind of bring me out and, do like a country music, a gimmick and character, and there was even talk of me doing something with Jeff, which would make sense since he was doing his thing, but who knows, man. I mean, me being the new guy, I mean, Jeff could have shot that down, being he was one of the top guys, but I do remember Ed Ferrara telling me that when they were going to shut it down, he said, yeah, it's just too Southern for us or something. And I'm thinking to myself, you're WCW based out of Atlanta.
Exactly.
You're telling me that something's too Southern for wrestling. For whatever reason, they shut it down. But yeah, man, it would have been cool to debut something like that. And I don't know where it would have gone, but I'd have done my best to, I'd have done my damnedest to make it work.
That's always been really crazy to me, man, is that a lot of the bigger companies look down upon the Southern wrestlers and things like that and think that everything that happened in fucking Memphis and shit was all, ha-ha and this and that, when it actually wasn't. I mean, a lot of brawling, a lot of, the hardcore before hardcore was hardcore. You had the Moondogs and the concession stand brawls and all that stuff. But yeah, that never made sense to me why they thought that, oh, that's too Southern. And I'm not talking about just your deal, but just anything in general.
Yeah, I mean, if they'd ever given a chance to actually sit down and watch it, they would have seen that it wasn't just all a bunch of gimmick matches or anything. I mean, these guys, they had stories, man. They had the reason it was so hot is because people were invested in that, man. They really had you in, and they were drawing houses, and you know, they were. I mean, you just got so hooked into it, and it just became kind of like the Memphis kind of thing, and. All that Southern wrestling.
Southern wrestling. So, man, I did not realize something. I was a couple of days ago looking. I was that many days old when I realized that when Elix Skipper does the Frankensteiner off the top of the cage, that was you that took it. I've seen that a bazillion times, but I never like noticed it was you for whatever reason. So let's talk about that. How was that? I guess he presented it to you, obviously, and you're like, sure.
Well, not that fast. Yeah, thanks, Wolfie, for noticing that. Yeah, everybody seems to remember Elix's spot, and they forget the poor soul that took that.
Wolfie's always 15-foot
bump. Yeah, I've gotten that up so much over the years, man. Yeah, just where people talk about that, but they don't really know who took it. And even if you know it's America's Most Wanted, you're not sure which one. And yeah, I used to give Elix shit for that. So, but yeah, man. So we were actually the main event for that pay-per-view, and we had had a cage match with Triple X in Nashville that was really hot. And so we went into this, and we didn't know, you know, do you really go into it trying to top it, or just, you know, we just wanted to go in and just do everything we could to you know, just get the attention, man, and just do whatever we could. And there was a lot of crazy spots in that match, but yeah, during the day, Elix, and what a lot of people don't realize or don't remember, because it is it's an incredible feat that he did, but Elix was known for setting people on the rope and walking from the turnbuckle, walking the ropes and doing a Hurricane Rana.
Right, exactly.
So so this was something he had kind of, I mean, that was part of his arsenal and his matches. And, you know, even doing that was incredible. People just, you know, were like, wow, you know, that's, you don't see that. So for him to do something like this, you know, for the fans that, you know, were paying attention and were our loyal fans, that, you know, they would kind of remember that part of it. But yeah, Elix mentioned it to me, and earlier in the day, and I mean, no, you guys said that, okay, no, it wasn't anything. I was like, hell no. there ain't no way. I mean, there's just too much. It's so dangerous and too much room for error. And, you know, we probably talked about it, you know, more of a conversation then, but it was just kind of decided where I was like, I don't know, man. I was just steering against it. So I know a few hours had passed. I don't know how close to showtime we were, but, it was, you know, it was getting time. And, I remember, I guess I had just stewed on it for a few hours, and you know what, you know how we work, Wolfie. It's like, man, you know, if there's a time to do this, you know, what will we not do it and regret it? And just, so I just kind of built myself up myself, and I went to him, and I said, Elix, I said, are you sure you can do this? And I just kind of presented it to him like that. And man, I tell you what really flipped me. What really convinced me was his confidence. He looked at me, he said, yes, I can do it. And Elix's confidence to me, that's what put me over the top, to where I was like, all right, let's do it then. Yeah. And you know, as well as I do, man, stuff like that there's no going over that. You don't,
no.
There's no, practice or anything. I mean, that's a one and done kind of thing. So, you know, there was a lot of room for error, but, yeah, man, it couldn't have come off any better. I always used to say, you know, because you can see if you watch the spot, Elix is kind of stumbling to get his footing on the top of the cage at first. Yeah,
right.
And and so I'm worried that he's not going to make it. And I remember because Daniels was kind of keeping me busy, so I don't just wait for the spot like we see so much nowadays. You know, I was fighting with Daniels, and I remember as I'm kicking him, I'm like, all right, man, he ain't coming. What's plan B? And before we even had a chance, you know, I had my eyes were on Daniels, and I looked out of the corner of my eye, And before I even know it, before I could even turn my head, man, Elix was on me and we were gone. So it was one of those things where once he got his footing, he went. And I've talked to him about it. It wasn't that long ago, just like a year or so ago. Mm-hmm. We got to talking about it, and something was brought up about him getting his footing. And I told him, it worried me. And you know what he said to me, man? He said, "Well, if I'd have just hopped up there and made it look easy, it wouldn't have looked as incredible." Oh my God. He said, "I had to make it look like I was, struggling a little bit." And I tell you, man, he worked me because I believed it.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't ask him if that's bullshit or not, but I just told him, I said, "Man, that makes sense. Make it look like a struggle. I mean, if he'd have just hopped up there, then maybe it'd look too easy for him." And he made it look like a struggle, and it made it look, it put the people more on the edge of their seat. Like, oh my God, what is he doing? What is he doing? What is he doing? And holy shit, he's walking. And so, it just added to the intrigue of it, man. And off we went. And it's crazy to think, over 20 years later, it's been 19 years. Mm-hmm. We're still talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, incredible move. And I've taken them off the top rope and stuff, but I've never obviously taken one off the cage like that. I don't think anybody has except for you. did he tell you, like,
I'm the only dumbass.
Oh man, come on.
Did he tell you, like, how he wanted you to be sitting? Because that's what I noticed the most, was because even when you do that off the top rope, some dudes can't take that correctly. But your hands were in the right place. You had your feet against the cage there. I mean, there's not really too many other ways you could have sat, but it looked to me like you were in perfect position to take it.
Yeah, and I also had taken it off the top, and I don't remember us actually talking about that. I think just me, being a pro and knowing what to do. I just feel like once he was there, I just had to have my arms free there, and plus, when him going, how much of a hold he would have on me. So you kind of want to keep your feet against that cage so you can push off a little bit. And, plus to just to save my own life, I want to make sure I get completely flipped on that. And I mean, I couldn't have taken a better bump. I mean, it was a flat bump. So the bump was fine. It's just being that so far up. I remember, of course, it knocked the wind out of me. So that hurt. But, I remember I thought I grabbed my side. I thought maybe I'd, done something to my ribs, crack or something like that. And, but it could have just been getting the wind knocked out of me. And next thing you know, I turn around and I'm still selling that. And next thing you know, Chris Daniels is coming off the top with an elbow. So I was like, holy shit.
When you're looking up at somebody and they're that far up, it's so intimidating.
man. And they're about to land on you. And you can't fake gravity.
No.
Right. Right.
And that's, I have done some dives off the cage and stuff, and those are the bumps. And you tell me if you remember this or if it happened, because I always say that when you get to a certain height, okay, in doing certain bumps or whatever, there's a height in which you feel yourself, you feel your momentum picking up, first of all. And then I always could hear the wind going past my ears. When you get that high and you're coming down, you hear it go, you're fixing to crash land.
when that goes on for longer than normal, that you're still falling too.
But man, that's a very memorable bump. And honestly, I didn't mean to say it in a way to take anything away from you, but just because I never have seen the whole match. I've only seen that clip. So it's pretty quick.
Yeah.
And boom, and not really knowing who was in the match or whatever. Yeah, but I figured it out the other day because I think you posted it on social media, and I was like, that was him. Okay.
That something came up where it was the 19th anniversary, and so I was like, oh damn, I didn't even know that. So I reposted that, but it's just it's crazy, man. You pay that, people remember that.
No doubt.
And to me, Elix was a pretty underrated guy, man. He's very talented.
I agree, man. I think he was very underrated. He was so athletic and could do just about anything in the ring. And he was, I think he was, I think one of the reasons they made such a good team is because I always looked at Chris Daniels as a great ring general. So, you know, for him to be out there, and he can kind of control the pacing of the match, and then, you know, feed Elix in for when he can get his stuff in. And it was just a great dynamic that those two had. So
yeah
but Elix, I agree. I think once they split, I think he could have done a lot on his own and even in the X division, but mm-hmm. They didn't do a whole lot with him. So that was I was disappointed in that.
Yeah.
Those X division matches, if they were just say like on AEW TV today, Dave Meltzer would be like handing out 5 stars left and right. that was some incredible stuff during that time. And I remember buying all the DVDs, you know, and I'm like, holy crap, they have like amped it up totally. You know, instead of putting it like in a weight class, it was more about how far you're willing to push it in the ring. And I thought those X division matches from those, especially those early eras, were some of the best for sure.
Yeah, the X division is another thing in those early days. That's what made, you know, another thing that's made TNA stand out. And you see it on every wrestling program today, but back then it was something new. And it wasn't just a weight class. It was, you know, and that's the thing, a lot of people have complained about it over the years because they're like, oh, it's just a glorified cruiserweight or something. But I mean, you can look at it however you want, but it was just, I like the way you phrase that. It was just, you know, what are you willing to do,
right.
to be out there? And, you know, and that's the thing, even though that may not be my style or even Wolfie's style, you know, we have to agree there's a place for that in wrestling. So, those guys would go out there and, you know, a lot of times they'd be on first, and man, that amplified, TNA, total nonstop action. You throw a match like that out there. And even if it wasn't just two guys, sometimes 4 or 5 guys, and, you know, they're just flying all over the place, and you're like, holy shit, yeah, I can get in this promotion. And but they were way before their time, man, because it's being done a lot nowadays. And back then it was the new thing, and it was just incredible what some of these guys could do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I got to ask this question. Now, I know on several different millions of podcasts that you've been on, you've talked a lot about the Braden Walker. That's what everybody wants to talk about. And obviously, we know James Storm had some time in NXT, but I'm not really maybe as interested about that. I want to hear more about this. Was there truth to the fact that America's Most Wanted almost went to WWE at one time?
I wouldn't even say we were close. There was talk. I remember probably two of our contract signings. There was talk about it, and we were kind of weighing our options. Definitely talk between Storm and I. And I think you know, we call it sending out your feelers, you know, that kind of thing. And
sure.
I think there was interest there, but I guess this would have been more on like an 05 kind of thing. And I'm just guessing at the year, but there was talk then. But honestly, man, I'd like to think, you know, Storm and I were just, we were just so grateful for the opportunity that we had, and we were enjoying our time. And we had really caught some eyes and some headlines for, you know, the tag team division, and not just with us, but tag team in the wrestling world. Bottom line, we were happy where we were, and we were just okay doing it. And honestly, one of my big thoughts were, and this goes back to one of the reasons I think a lot of us really took off, like the new church, like America's Most Wanted in the early days, was because tag team wrestling in general in 02 or even earlier than that, 2000, 01, you know, we had, I think 99 and 2000 were pretty big years, because I think like the Dudleys, Edge and Christian, Hardys, they really stood out for that time. But then come 01 and 02, if you look at the tag team division back then, it was a lot of singles guys that were just paired up.
Yep.
And, you know, you got to remember, WCW was gone, ECW was gone, so it was only the WWE, and two singles guys paired up. They quickly won the belts. Then they lose the belts, they turn on each other, and then they're in a feud. And it was just, right. that's just right. the, that seemed to be the system they were going with. And I remember my thought, I'm sure I mentioned it to Storm, but I felt like if we did go, we would be broke up within 6 months, feuding with each other, and then and then we'd probably get lost in the shuffle there somewhere and just you know, be one of the many. So anyway, just to answer your question, we decided decided no and stayed with them. And then I think when the next time it was up, we had talked about in 07 when we actually had already split, and which I actually wound up going, but Storm just on his own, he decided to stay. He didn't want to take the chance, and so he stayed. And I think that probably, you know, brought my value down a little bit, just because I think we would have definitely made a mark more as a team. But
he
decided to stay, and then more thought into it, I decided to go. But yeah, I would say we were never close. I mean, it was never you know, any talks of, you know, money or anything like that. We were just happy with where we were with TNA, and just like that we wanted to be loyal to TNA.
Yeah. I just love that y'all were a designated tag team. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like you said, there were so many, that was the decade of two single stars, and it still goes on. You know what I mean? It all depends on what story they're trying to tell. And I understand that part of it, but I always liked it. You know, like there was London and Kendrick, there was Cade and Murdoch. I always liked it when there was like designated tag teams during that time frame. And that you guys were definitely one of those, you know? So I always appreciated that fact about it. You know, like the New Church, they were a bunch of these evil pirates over here, basically. Basically, any two of them in that crew could come on and battle, but you know, when it came down to it.
No, I agree with you, because I mean that's what I grew up on, and I'm Wolfie probably the same. I mean, when we grew up in the, you know, the 80s tag teams and you know, even the early 90s, it's like, you know, man, that's what happened to established tag teams that, you know, could go out and kind of perform the art of tag team wrestling. And I just think that was lost.
Yeah.
For sure.
Amen. Yeah.
Even going back way back though, WWF was always like that. In my opinion, they never really were big on the, you know, the established tag teams, where that was more of a WCW and territory thing. In my
That's
opinion.
True. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's take a quick time out and get a word from one of my dope-ass sponsors, and we'll be right back with more Live and in Color with Wolfie D.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita!
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Support for Live and in Color with Wolfie D is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped recently launched the Ultimate Men's Hygiene Bundle, the Performance Package. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code WOLFIE at manscaped.com. If my math's correct, that's about 8 million balls.
Hey folks, this is Wolfie D here. And if you are looking to buy or sell a home in Tennessee or Southern Kentucky, you're gonna wanna call my buddy, the rock star realtor, Benji Bowie. And you say, Wolfie, how do I get in touch with this rock star? Well, you can call him directly at 615-390-8216. You can go to his website, BowieHomes.com. That's B-U-I-E Homes.com. Or you can email him at BenBowie34@gmail.com. When you need a home, you need the Rockstar Realtor.
Benji is a member of Exit Realty's Garden Gate team in Gallatin, Tennessee.
So this is what I like to hear. Wrestling's all fine and dandy, but the fun stuff that comes along with wrestling is the road stories and the ribs and stuff. And we can edit, so if you got to think for a second, whatever. Give me some good the road stories or ribs or something.
Oh, wow, man. I guess there a couple that come to mind. I feel bad picking on. Well, no, I don't. But Abyss, I rode up and down I rode up and down the road with him so much. We were part of whether ribs are put on us or whether, you know, we were doing it to someone else. And, this wasn't really a rib, but it's a good road story that you, Wolfie, you might appreciate. So, I do have a good rib story for you on Abyss. I don't remember where. I'm guessing we might've been in the down in Kentucky or, just driving the streets where, I mean, there was nothing on the road for miles. One of those kind of things. So it probably had to be whether it was Kentucky, Tennessee kind of area. But, so we were on a road trip. It was at night. We finished up a show, probably going to the next town. And, we've been on this road for miles, and, it's just the two of us in the car. I'm driving, he's in the passenger seat. And, so we're driving, and I guess a car had come up and just started kind of messing with us from behind, and maybe it was like throwing brights on and bumpering, that kind of thing, just really pissing us off. So then they would pass us, and you know, we're just kind of like, whatever, you know, just whatever it is. And but then they'd slow down again, and then they'd get real close to us again and just start messing with us, man. And then I'd pass them, and it just became one of those things where it's like, who the hell are these guys? And you know, and I remember Abyss was like, you know, we need to find a place to pull over or something. And he's like, get these guys, you know, I mean, we're just talking shit in the car. And and I'm thinking, good Lord, you know, we're going to wind up, we'll wind up on the real America's Most Wanted list. But lo and behold, man, we coming up, we saw just, you know, one of those rundown gas stations coming up on the right. And it wasn't well lit, but he was like, Abyss was hot by this time, man. I was just, you know, I'm the driver, so I'm just trying to compose myself with driving. But he was hot. He's like, pull this damn thing over. And so I pulled in there, and you know, we were ready for anything, man. And I pulled in, and this car, it squealed in right behind us. So we knew some shit was on. Yeah. And they pulled in, they squealed right behind us, and they got out of the car, man. And I'm telling you, before I even had I think I got as far as my seatbelt off, before I could even get out of the car, this big ass is opening up the door and running out. And there's about three guys that got out of a car, just average size guys, and start approaching our car. And the monster Abyss gets out on his side and just starts walking towards them. And I mean, if you can just imagine that setting, that visual, him going after it. And, I take it back. I'm adding too much to it. They never got out of the car. They just squealed up and slammed on the brakes right behind us. And, but he was already out of the car on his way back to their car.
Yeah.
And man, the reason I remember they didn't get out is because those brakes squealed and they hit that reverse and squealed right back out, man. I don't know. They had to shit their pants or something when they saw that, because they wanted no part of it. They squealed back. Here's the best part of the story. So they're in reverse. They start reversing out of there to get the hell out of Dodge, man. And then in the reverse process, there was another car pulling in right behind them, and they slammed right into the car.
Oh my God.
And they wrecked right into the car that came in from behind. And I'm telling you, instead of the hostility from Abyss went from 10 down to zero because he busted out in a belly laugh at him. Just started laughing his ass off at him just because they were just idiots, man, what they were doing. And then it just came to they turned into, they had a wreck. We just got in the car and we just pulled off, just let it go, man. So that came to mind, man, because just his, I mean, it always helped when I was on the road with him, man, because anybody giving us trouble, I mean, I'm a bigger than average size guy and I can hold my own, but man, having him standing next to you, it's like, shit, you know, what idiot wants to approach us now?
And I'm having a hard time not imagining him in his gimmick doing that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know he wears, like, you guys know him and he wears normal clothes, but I just got to imagine him in the mask and everything. Yeah, I would, the car. Yeah, I would be in that.
Yeah, car. It wasn't even the monster approaching. It was just the no mask and his hair pulled back. But man, he's a giant man. And just having that guy come after you, that's enough to freak you out. But here's a good rib, and you guys mentioned Kurt Hennig earlier. So I'll tell you this. So Abyss used to be, in our early traveling days, he used to be a Jack and Coke drinker, and I was more of a beer drinker. We kind of flip-flop as years later, we kind of flip. But so he was the Jack drinker. Well, you spent enough time with Kurt Hennig, you know you're going to be doing some shots of Jack with him. That's just how it was. And I was very appreciative to be initiated into that. I did many with him, and it wasn't just shots. You had to gargle. That was part of the thing.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, take a shot of Jack. I remember the first time I did one with him, man. I was like, holy shit! I mean, I wasn't a Jack drinker. I quickly became one, but I wasn't a Jack drinker. And Kurt, I remember we were at Tootsie's down in Nashville, man. I know you know Tootsie's.
Oh yeah.
So we were doing a shot there, and he said, "Now you got to gargle." And I'm thinking, "Gargle? I never heard of gargling whiskey." And I was like, "That shit would." I mean, I'm telling myself, "Hell no! I'm doing a shot because it's Kurt Hennig." But so we did our shot, man. And before I could even try to swallow it, he goozled me so tight and wouldn't even let the shit go down my throat. He made me gargle it, like, because his hand was around my throat. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I say all that to say, so we were back at a hotel bar one night after a show. It was, a few of the guys, Kurt, me, Abyss, and a few other people. And I just started stirring the pot because he had been a Jack drinker. And I was like, you know, I can't believe you told me you could drink Kurt under the table with Jack. And of course, Abyss is like, shut the fuck up, man. Don't start that kind of stuff. And so I just kept stirring the pot. So finally I got Kurt, and he goes up to the bar and comes back with two shots of Jack. And man, here we go. We're off to the races. And him and Abyss, they do their shot. And we were just trying to see, and it just kind of went on. And, Kurt would bring back more shots, and I'm not sure how many shots we got in. But I tell you what, man, Abyss had to be, and this is a big man, remember, he had to be carried to his room, and Kurt was just, man, it was like he just come in on his first drink. He was just fine, and we come to find out that the whole time he was going up, he was ordering a shot of Jack and a shot of iced tea.
Oh, man.
Good. Hey, I'll tell
you this. Before Abyss had to fall that.
Oh man, that's a Ric Flair move I've heard. Anyway, yeah.
Me and Chris roomed together one night after a show, and it wasn't at the fairgrounds. I can't remember where it was. It was it might not have even been a TNA show, but for whatever reason, me and him were together, and there was a couple of the females that had come over or whatever, and I mean, we were three sheets in the wind already, and I don't really remember much of it. But I do know that the next morning, they were gone, and he and I had zero money in our wallets. And
Oh, man.
Yeah. And
you had a rip plate on you.
I thought it was him at first. I swear to God. But I actually just saw him like a year ago at a WWE event. He was the agent or producer or whatever, and got the kid, my girl's kid, backstage and all that mess. But I reminded him of that, and he was laughing. But I don't think it was him.
Do you remember? I thought you might have been talking about this, but Do you remember the very first TNA pay-per-view in Huntsville, Alabama?
Yeah.
This just came to my mind. We all roomed together. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and Storm and the Guns, or me. And
yeah,
the-
man, it was me, you, Abyss, and Storm. Uh-huh. And, of course, Abyss and I are, it was the night before the pay-per-view, and Abyss and I are trying to be the good soldiers, and we were like, yeah, we want to get a good night's sleep. And so, but Wolfie and Storm, no, man, they were going to hit the town. So we were like, okay, cool, you know, we'll do our thing and you guys do yours. And, you know, I wanted to be good and ready for the next day. I wasn't, I guess, yet into the party in all night, every town kind of thing. But
yeah,
I remember we were sleeping and these guys come busting in, couldn't tell you what time, 2-3 in the morning. I don't know, but they come busting in. Back at that time, Storm was doing it, part of his cowboy gimmick. He actually carried pistols to the ring with him, like I guess they were caps.
Yeah, cap gun.
He was shooting off. Yeah, so he'd get in the ring, and that was part of his presentation. He'd shoot off the cap guns, and the fans loved it, kind of thing. So he had the guns, and they came into the. Just try to imagine, you know, getting a good night's sleep, and the door busts open, and next thing you know, the fucking guns are going off.
oh my god.
And me and Abyss just jumped up we didn't know what the hell was going on. I don't know if we thought we were being murdered or what the hell was going on, but you guys just thought that was the funniest damn thing. And now it is, of course, but it wasn't then.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Oh my God. And Storm reminded me of that story because I'd forgotten about it, but one of the last times I saw him, he was telling me that, and I remembered it then. Yeah, that was funny stuff. He's like, because he said, you were shooting off my guns, and I guess they called the front desk. Somebody called the front desk.
Oh, my God.
Well, hell yeah.
It was Abyss and Chris. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. Yeah, I can't imagine the adrenaline rush of being woken out of a dead sleep with cap guns going off. I can't imagine that. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good one. That was a real good one.
Oh, my God.
So, having said that and talking about, you know, the partying and stuff like that, now I know that recently you've quit all that, man, and you put together quite – what are you at, a year, I think I saw, or
– No, in November I was at 2 years.
That's awesome.
Super incredible, and people don't understand how hard that is, man. You know, I've battled with it for many years. I've strung together some months and right at a year, and you know, then I'll go back. And but you know, these days I can at least say that you know, I somewhat have it under control, where I'm not the wild crazy person I used to be. Not too much crazy, we'll say. That's an incredible feat, man. It really is something that's hard to do, man. People don't understand how hard it is, man.
Yeah, man. It's just, especially in a business like this, and you can go with, you know, rock and roll business or wrestling or any entertainment business. It's just, it's kind of part of the road. And especially back then, it was the norm to do that. Yeah. I mean, I know it's probably not as much now, but yeah, I mean, I had my fun, man, and we had some great times, and yeah, back then I felt like I had somewhat of a control on it, because, you know, we would just go out after the shows and have our drinks and do our thing, and it was, you know, we back up doing it again the next day, and everything was all good. But yeah, it just got to a time, and it kind of started after the WWE debacle. I just kind of took a turn, man, and I just went down fast and, you know, hit the depression kind of thing. And I just, you know, drinking was always a part of my life. So I just kind of turned to that, and it was getting out of control even back then. I mean, that was, you know, that was over, I mean, hell, 10, 15 years ago. And and it just started taking its toll on me there. And I just, I did not pull myself out for a long time, man. I mean, it wasn't something that came out in a year or so. I mean, I was in a dark place for a lot of years, and the drinking was just, it was there, and it was just part of it. And I was just abusing it, and, this is kind of the time where, like you and I both said, at certain points, we feel like we at least have some control over it. Well, this is when I lost the control, man, and it took over me. And I remember, you know, when it started getting to be an issue and people were noticing and my doctors were asking questions about it. And so I wound up, you know, once I looked at kind of the definition of an alcoholic and I started looking at different things that it was, and I was like, holy shit, I'm a lot of these things. And so I wound up identifying me. It was like, okay, I identified myself as an alcoholic, but the truth was, I was like, but I don't want to stop. I mean, drinking is just such a part of my life and such a part of everything I do. I just could never imagine myself stopping. And it took, and the funny thing about it, like a lot of people hit their rock bottom and then they kind of pull themselves out of that. Well, my rock bottom was years ago, where I had nothing, man. And, you know, without getting into the story, I started rebuilding things a little bit. I reconnected with my now wife. I had her in my life and I got a house and I had to get a job. You know, I'm sure you've dealt with that also, Wolfie. Anytime, you know, you're out of that limelight, man. When it's over, it's the worst feeling in the world for you to have to accept to go back to the real world.
I know.
And but I had a full-time job, and so I was getting things together, but I always had that alcohol on my shoulder, and you know, that devil on my shoulder, and I felt like things were coming together, and my wife was supportive, and but I still had that, and then it just took. I remember telling her, because I had had some legal troubles in the past, too. I mean, as you can probably imagine. And I remember I told her, I made a promise to her. I said, look, I can't promise that I'll never drink again, but I promise that I won't drink and drive again. Yeah. And I'll be damned if I didn't do that again and wound up getting a DUI. And it just, when that happened, it was just, you know, because I felt like things had been going so well and I messed it up again. And I had some great people reach out to me. One of them being Jeff Jarrett, man, because he had just gone through it a few years prior, and he reached out to me and was telling me all about that WWE program that they offer and has helped so many people. And I think with the support of those guys and just, you know, kind of taking me by the hand and leading me into it, I wound up going to treatment for 60 days. And I don't know, man. I was ready to make a change, and that's really what it is. Like I'd said before, I didn't want to stop before, and now I was ready to stop, and I was ready to do whatever I had to do. And so I dove into the program, man. And that's what I've continued to do for the past couple of years, is just do that program, because the relapses usually happen when people they fall off of the program a little bit. Right. So it's worked for me, man. I can't speak for anybody else because everybody's got their own path and the way they do it. But that's what's worked for me, and it's been 2 years now. And now I'm having the opportunity to actually have some recovery talks where I talk in front of people. And the foundation is based out of the WWE program. A lot of the people that it has helped. We've kind of gone on the road and start talking to people. And so it's wrestlers, which we all have different journeys. And goes into our journey with sobriety. And, you know, that way people can relate to, I mean, maybe you can't relate to one guy, but you can relate to the other. And so we can kind of tell our story and try to help others, man. And it's just, all I can say is it's worked for me. But you're right, man. It's one hell of a fight. It's a hell of a struggle, and and they ain't lying when they say it's every day. I mean, it's a everyday struggle, and we have to. Our motto is, you know, one day at a time, because we just got to try to get through today to get to tomorrow. And we just kind of tell our story, and but it's a struggle for us every day. I'm actually 2 years sounds great, and it is to me. It's quite an accomplishment, but you know, there's people I meet in this program that are 20 and 30 years sober, and I'm like, holy shit, how do you do that? Thanks for bringing that up, man.
Yeah, man, and people can say what they want too about the, you know, the reason why WWE came out with the program and all that, but I'll say, man, they saved me on a number of occasions, man. You know, I've been to their rehabs more times than I'd like to admit, man, but it absolutely does help, and kind of, like I said, put me on a different trajectory of not complete sobriety, but I'm a lot better than I used to be. I'll say that much. But man, yeah, very, very commendable of you to be able to pull that off, man. Seriously, you have my respect for that.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jimmy. Now ask some wrestling questions.
Well, I'm just going to, this has been an incredible conversation, man. Definitely appreciate it. I know it's coming up on our time, but I definitely want to get this question in. So your favorite match of all time as a fan, okay, and your favorite match of yours of all time.
Oh, man, that's so hard to, Wolfie will agree, that's so hard to do, man. I'm gonna have to say my favorite match of mine had to be us versus the New Church. Of course I'm gonna play politics here and
oh,
say that's the best match of all time. I tell you what, man, I love going back and watching that program from week to week. It was awesome. The match though that always stands out to me, and this was, I was always a fan, just like a lot of people my generation growing up as a fan, but and I know there's been thousands of people that have said this, but it's the truth with me. That Savage Steamboat at Mania 3, man.
It's incredible, man. Yeah.
When I saw that match and you know, and it wasn't just I guess with that one, it wasn't just the superhero kind of thing with Hogan and Andre, and you know, just they were, of course, those days they were supposed to be cartoon characters, and you know, just build them up like that. But I don't know, there was something I saw with Savage and Steve, which I was a Savage fan from day one, even for that heel run. I really loved him. But when I saw that match and I just saw the crowd in the palm of their hand, man, that's really what, even though I was young, I was thinking to myself, that, holy shit, if you could do that and perform that way and just have the people on the edge of their seat like that, that's what sucked me in, man. And I was like, I got to think about doing something like that. I mean, something like that. So that's really what pulled me in, man. Was that match, and I was hooked from then on. And but damn, the match, one of my favorite, I feel like there's so many that we have forgotten about that we may have had a great match on an independent show or something like that, or something that wasn't televised. And you know, it's unfortunate that those aren't in our memories anymore, because I feel like there's so much there. But I'd have to go to some TNA matches, just because I've watched them over and over again. I'd say our matches, my match with Storm is probably one of my best, even though it was a Texas Death match. It wasn't a normal regular rules match. We beat the shit out of each other, and but that really, I feel like, you know, I'm not known for a hardcore wrestler, but I felt like for a match that where we were bringing weapons in, we tried to pull as much psychology into that as we could and make everything mean something.
Right.
So that stands out. My world title match with Jeff Jarrett really stands out. Mm-hmm. Because they hadn't split us up, but Storm was injured at the time, and we had a great program building up to where people really believed that I was going to take Jeff down, and that really stands out to me. Of course, the Six Sides of Steel match with Triple X stands out. Just so many. And then I was fortunate enough to be in a couple of those King of the Mountain matches, which, you know, a lot of people look down on sometimes because of the rules, but hey man, when you're known for being a tag team wrestler, and then you're all of a sudden you're one of five top contenders for the title, to be put in that kind of category, it just, you know, that really just, you know, makes you open your eyes and be like, man, you know, I they believe that I belong in here. And so I mean, even that the one in 07 I did, I was in there with Kurt Angle, Christian, AJ Styles, and Samoa Joe, and then there's me in there. So just to be able to put myself in that category, it just felt really good. But yeah, it's hard to pinpoint one, but there's definitely a lot of those matches that really stand out, that you know, you really put put a lot of hard work into. And and it seems to be those are the ones, like I said, I mean, those are the televised ones. So those are the ones everybody sees. So it's more known to those people, to everybody else. But yeah, I mean, just some great matches. But I'm not blowing smoke. Those matches with the New Church were just, and we were young, man. We were new as a team, and you know, we were willing to learn. I mean, I learned a lot from not just you, man, but also Brian. I mean, Brian really, I got tight with Brian during that time and really learned a lot from him. And he was always there to try to help me out. I mean, I remember one time that we were doing a run in. I think there was a lot more people involved, but everybody was running in, and I remember Brian kind of shoved me up until to the front of the pack, and just a little simple lesson like this. He was like, get up there. And I was like, well, I can blend in with everybody. He goes, no, you be the first one out there so that the camera's you're the first one the camera picks up. Yeah. And I was just like, holy shit. Yeah. Just so simple, you know, but you don't think of it. You're just, I'm one of many guys doing a run in. So we're all just doing our thing, and he's like, you know, no, you get out there, you're the first one, so that the camera picks you up. And I was like, wow. And just something as simple like that, just, you know, you don't forget things like that. So thank you for those matches, man. I really really enjoyed that.
Who was stiffer, Brian or Wolfie?
It was definitely you, man. Didn't you have some steel plates on your boots or something like that?
Catch your shin guards,
Oh my god.
Real quick, I want to go back to something to see if you know, because I'm not the wrestling historian, you know. I mean, I do know my history, but not like some folks. This came up on one of our recent shows. When Randy Savage in Memphis pile-drived Ricky Morton through a table, I believe, and if you could think of something before that, please, this is what I'm asking. Was that the first wrestling table break?
You know what? I've seen that, and I actually forgot about that because I think a lot of people think it was 89 with Funk and Flair.
Before that,
I remember a Saturday night's main event between Hogan and Harley Race, Race went through a table. So that made me think to that one. That was actually first. So in my mind, I was thinking maybe that was, but you might be right, man, because that was definitely before. What year was that? Maybe like 84, something like that.
Was it 82, Jimmy? We discovered?
I think it's 82. Yeah, 82. Yeah.
Oh, 82.
Yeah,
and he did. He did the Funk Flair spot, right? It was a pile driver on the table, right?
Right. Yeah. I love that Funk Flair spot. But Wolfie and I recently talked about this moment actually on the show. You know, it's where Flair is basically having to hold himself up. Now, I'll never question anything about Terry Funk or Ric Flair. I'll just quit podcasting before I start doing that. But it was just, you know, kind of where it was like an awkward spot, I think, and Flair's holding himself up. But that is the first one I remember, even though I probably saw the Harley Race spot. I know for a fact the first one I remember is that. So, but I think you must be right on that, Wolfie, for sure.
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, just... I'd have to go with you too, Wolfie. I think that had to be. And it's funny because if you're asking historians, they'd probably say, well, it's probably done somewhere down there in Memphis. It was probably done in one of the southern.
Right.
You think to yourself, and you're like, well, yeah, you're pretty much right. They did a lot of the first back then and just never got the credit for it. So, wow, man, yeah, I know you and I probably run into Ricky a lot, so I'd have to ask you about that next time.
For sure.
Well, Ricky's definitely going to claim it. You know that. He's,
Yeah, you're right. What's the use in asking him? You know he's going to claim it.
Just ask him and fucking kayfabe record it so I can hear the answer.
I would love that, Chris. Can you be like a roving reporter for us?
Hell yes. Hell yeah!
Reporter here for live.
You can air it on the podcast too.
We would love that. Yes, anytime.
Hey, didn't we have to? He came on my show like 2 years ago.
Yeah,
like
2 years ago.
Tell him the story, Jimmy.
Oh, dude, it's hilarious. So like, we get on there and we start. We have like 20 minutes long with him, and I think we get on there. You know, we just BS a little bit before we start recording. Well, he counted that as the time towards the show. He was like, "All right, boy." voice is coming. And then we asked him a couple questions. And of course, I was very early in podcasting. And I'm sorry, I'm a lifelong Ricky Morton mark. So it's basically like Wolfie trying to have a serious conversation with this guy. And I'm sitting over here like, hey, man, you're great, man. Did you remember that? You're great. You know, and I'm just like totally losing my stuff over Ricky. And then basically all of a sudden he goes, well, all right, fellas, it's time to go. And we're just like, all right, thank you, sir.
I guess you weren't going to argue with him, but yeah.
Right, no.
He had the clock ticking.
Yeah,
he yeah. did. And Ricky said on this show.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah,
he said PG-13, they kept Memphis afloat. They, you know, you kept them in business and working with us and blah, blah, blah. And PG was right. over and blah, blah, blah. And then Jimmy hears him on something else. Saying he already told somebody that PG-13 killed Memphis. So.
Oh my god! So, hey man, that's a worker. That's a worker for you,
dude. Yeah.
So Jimmy goes back and he plays. He records that and records what he said on our show, and we put it on our show of both comments.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's on YouTube somewhere where it's like him saying one. And it's probably got us some heat, I would imagine. But, you know, what are you going to do, right?
Yeah. But anyway, man. Hey,
I'd love to see some of your matches, man, back from back then, like before you guys even hooked up with WWE, like you and some of PG-13's matches, like the USWA, or I mean, where can you find some of that? Is that just YouTube kind of stuff?
Yeah, basically, YouTube. Yeah. Armstrong Alley, if you can find that on YouTube, they have a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Okay.
Yeah,
there's a Texas death match with us in Rock and Roll that, like you were saying, one of your favorite matches and stuff. That was definitely one of my favorite matches.
Great.
Because it had a lot of run-ins and it was good. But
definitely check that out, man.
There's a really good one with them in Louisville too, though. Check that one out.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
But Chris, man, it has been great having you on. Great catching up with you, man. I guess the last time I saw you was at Slammiversary a couple of years ago.
I marked out when I heard that music for you, man, when you came out Slammiversary.
That was awesome.
Yeah. So I was thinking, are you, and I'm not saying this in a facetious way, I promise, Chris, are you and James already in the Hall of Fame in TNA?
We are not.
Okay, so here's what I'm thinking. You know how, like, when Hogan went in, Piper went in, you know, that kind of thing for the Hall of Fame for WWE? Here's what I'm thinking. TNA Hall of Fame 2024, America's Most Wanted, and the New Church. It's got to go in this time.
It should.
Hey, that all sounds great if we can ever find Brian Lee on this planet.
Yeah, that's such a great point, man. Yeah.
He was.
I've tried to track him down. I can't find him anywhere.
I saw him about 3 years ago at a convention, and he wasn't even with me. He was just by himself as prime time. Somebody brought him in, and I got his number. And it's just hard to get in touch with him, whether he's kayfabe or don't want to. You know, some of these guys get away from the business and they don't want to be back around it. So, I mean, I can appreciate that.
Yeah, that actually surprises me. He was doing a convention. That's good to hear, though. I mean, he was out there.
I think it was the one time thing. I think he had his. Had his fill after that. But anyway, man, yeah, great catching up with you, man. Don't be a stranger. I got your phone number now, so
hell yeah, man, let's definitely stay in touch.
I'm in Somerset, Kentucky, so if you're around, man, give me a shout, man. David Young showed up at my house about 2 weeks ago, which was kind of funny. He just happened to be coming through, and Rod Hicks told him I lived here, and he came and hung out with me for about an hour or so. But yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, man. So he just shows up at the door. He doesn't even let you know he's coming.
Well, Rod told me, and they actually both came by. But Rod's like, hey, David Young's here. I told him where you live. I said, okay.
Cool, yeah, man. I love David, man.
Yeah. Well, all right, dude. I'm going to let you get back to your day. And Jimmy, tell me what we're coming back with.
Ask Wolfie D anything. You know
all
this.
Right. Sounds good to me. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you so much, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much. It's definitely a lot of fun. We actually went over an hour, so thank you for that as well. I appreciate that.
Oh, no problem, man. It's hard to cut it short when you when you're having fun, unless you're Ricky Morton.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. We'll be back.
All right.
Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, DJ, hit that music. All right, we are back with Ask Wolfie D Anything. And man, I tell you, Wildcat Chris Harris, dude, that was cool, man. Very cool interview.
Very fun, as usual, you know.
We've
gotten kind of good at this, haven't we?
I mean, we're closely there. Yeah, getting
that's
there.
What a lot of people have told me anyway.
That means the world, man. I love that. Yeah. I'm glad they tell you they throw tomatoes at me as I walk. Yeah. So anyway, well, we got some cool questions, man. You know, as always, you know, the listeners come through in the pinch when we need them with the Ask Wolfie. So the very first one, again, it's a common name, but very cool question. I like this one. So Ben Martin on Facebook, Ben Martin 88 on Twitter. He says this. So in November of 96, Paul Lee booked the Rock and Roll Express as a mystery team to wrestle the Gangsters. Mm-hmm. Something happened and they no-showed, but it made him think. Heel PG-13 a year early in ECW versus New Jack and Mustafa. Do you think it would have worked? And you know, he says, I personally would have liked to have seen both do something about Rock and Roll versus the Gangsters Part 2 with Ricky and Robert as heels. I just have a feeling Ricky as a heel with that crowd, he could have got a rise out of them. But of course, Jamie could start riots at the drop of a hat. So that would be great too. So yeah. Basically what he's saying is the Rock and Roll was going to come in as kind of doing the opposite of what they were, since that was the ECW style anyway. So instead, put you guys in that spot versus the Gangsters. I think it could have worked easily, man.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like me and Jamie could work with anybody. I'm kind of glad we did. And I don't want to be jumping on no fucking scaffolds and shit.
No doubt.
I mean, like, I don't guess I ever worked with Mustafa, but I've worked with Jack, you know, more than once. Right. And, you know, we always had good interactions with each other and good matches. And, but yeah, I mean, I think we could pull off something like that. I mean, no problem. Now, you know, we actually went up to ECW before we started going regular and, you know, worked with the Eliminators. There was a one and done type of deal, billing us as the only team that they had never defeated and all this kind of shit. But it was good.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I think it's interesting, you know, a lot of the guys that you would never think could be heels, you know, go to ECW and they're heels. It's pretty crazy, man. So, but you guys, I could easily see y'all being heels up there.
We were.
Yeah, exactly. 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 Yeah.
Except for the pay-per-view with the Dudleys.
They made you babyface. That was so weird. Yeah. But anyway. So the next question is from Chad Tutwiler, and he asked this one, and we kind of know this answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So I guess let's talk about the very end of this. So what happened to TCW? It had an old time feel. Now we know a lot of the similar instances happen with other promotions, mm-hmm. as you've said many times before, buddies get included in stuff that they shouldn't be. And,
mm-hmm.
But is that essentially really what it was? Was essentially too many guys, too many cooks in the kitchen? Didn't know what
to do. I mean, evidently, you know, the money ran out. And I don't know, you know, personally, I don't know his parents or anything, but I've heard that, you know, parents cut the money off and, you know, you can only bleed somebody so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you gotta say, oh.
Right. Just dial it back. Yeah, this is a little more than your allowance.
Yeah, your hobby is
Mr. Natty or fortune. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's basically it. As far as I know, you'd probably have to ask Matt and maybe get the real shoot story from him.
Yeah. Well, we tried in the past, but no response yet. But we'll, hopefully we'll get him someday. So, yeah, it's a good question because it's kind of like the telltale thing of all these upstart promotions. Mm-hmm. Either the money runs out or, you know, something else crazy happens. But usually it's the money, right? So, yeah, the money. Okay, cool. All right. Well, this next one is from Bobby Murray on Facebook. And, you know, I just got to know this. Any good stories from working for Kick-Ass Wrestling in Memphis?
Whew, I was usually high as a kite. That's really about it. This is always in a bar, and let's just say when I watch those matches, it just takes me to a dark period of my life where I just go, what was I thinking? You know, I was kind of not Wolfie anymore. I hadn't made the transition to Slash yet, and doing too much partying, and just I mean, I don't know. I just look at it and go, yeah. And not because of anyone but me.
Right. Right. So really not blaming Kick-Ass Wrestling, but just kind of a dark place for you itself. Yeah. So was this like when you were wearing long tights and boots and
yeah, but even before that, and then I even had like those biker shorts on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Was this like Power Pro time kind of?
No, I think it was before that.
Okay, gotcha. Okay,
I can't remember.
Yeah, got it. Okay. I've got like more pictures of you than I do my own family in my phone because of making all these photos for the podcast.
Right.
And, you know, I'm just thinking like, okay, I've seen all these pictures of you and I'm thinking like what era that was. So, but
yeah,
I know that feeling, man. You know, sometimes you just don't want to be reminded of it, much less see pictures of that time or whatever, but yeah, definitely understand. Well, you know, dark times hopefully always don't last. So that's a good thing. So Kick-Ass Wrestling, who ran that? Do you?
Terry Golden.
Terry Golden. All right. And that was in Memphis proper?
Yeah.
And is it still around or?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. All right. Was that something you normally worked for a while or was that?
I did it pretty regularly there for just a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. No. And what year would you say that is?
Before 2000, but after USWA.
Okay.
So probably, 98, 99, something like that.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Got it. Okay. That's cool, man. I was just curious because, you know, I've heard of the term. I've heard of the name of the wrestling promotion, but I had never. But yeah, man. Well, hey, those three were a breeze today. And, no need to beat a dead horse and go any further in that. So, yeah, that's all I got for you, brother.
Cool, man. And again, we always appreciate everybody tuning in. Like I said, I've been getting a lot of feedback from people when I went to the show.
Yeah, how was that, man?
Oh, it was good.
Yeah,
the fans, the house was okay, and but people I actually lowered my prices because I'm a nice hell of a guy, and I did pretty good. So
right, that's awesome.
Yeah,
you got it
affordable for everyone.
Yeah, that's a good idea, especially with the holidays, man. And plus, probably sold a few extra things because of it, too, I'm sure. So that's always smart.
Weigh your
options. You saw Dean Hill, of course, and Vic.
Dean Hill showed up, yeah.
Was Flash?
Trash and Flash both no-showed. Flash was sick, he said, and Trash had to work the races with the horses. So
okay.
Only Trash gets a pass. Flash,
Oh man, but he cut a heck of a promo on your birthday deal, so appreciate that for sure. But
right on, man.
Yeah, all right, well, that's all I got.
All right, me too. Tune in next week, y'all. I think I got another good guest lined up, so and I don't think he does many of these, so
I'm excited. Yeah,
well, tune in next week.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Give Me Back My Pro Wrestling, the podcast that's based on the old school, but can still help you find the good stuff from today. Jimmy Street, and the plastic chic, Jared, are the undisputed tag team champions of the wrestling podcast world. From thought-provoking topics to superstar interviews to action figure expertise, this team does it all. And all they ask is, give me back my pro wrestling! Every other Thursday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Join me, Gene Jackson, for the Jackson Interaction Podcast, where I'll be doing one-on-one interviews with people from the world of professional wrestling, as well as stand-up comedy. You can get them anywhere podcasts are available in both video and audio form, but you can find them all at GeneJacksonPod.com.
That's right. It's the talk of Middle Tennessee, the channel you love to hate and the channel you hate to love. It's Brian Turner from Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. And if you're looking for matches from Wolfie D to Jerry Lawler to Dusty Rhodes and the team that put a pimp before your eyes and a goatee between your thighs, Boudica and Athena, go to LostWrestling.com. See, I made it easy for you. Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. Booyah.
This is your rock star ring announcer, Aaron Camaro. I'm a man who believes the two greatest art forms ever created are professional wrestling and heavy rock music. So when I'm not hosting the best parties that also happen to be live professional wrestling shows, I'm hosting the Decibel Geek Podcast. Decibel Geek is a weekly podcast that features discussions of all things rock. We're talking the Beatles, the Stones, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, Black Sabbath, Kiss, Ozzy, Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Alice in Chains, Pantera, and everything in between. Plus, we'll turn you on to new bands from today that have the same spirit and style that the legends do. Decibel Geek is hosted by myself along with Rockin' Pod founder Chris Sinzak, and each week you'll get interviews with famous musicians and industry insiders along with informative, entertaining, humorous, and insightful discussions, and most importantly, a passion for the music. So if you love to rock out as much as I do, then this is your invitation to the greatest rock and roll party in all of podcasting. It's Decibel Geek, and it's available right now on all major podcast platforms. Oh yeah.
Hey everyone, this is Shane from Insane Shane's World. I release wrestling figures of enhancement talent, mid-card wrestlers, and wrestlers that you never thought would have a figure available. So if you are interested in adding a really cool and rare figure to your collection, then don't hesitate to contact me at shamtheman73@gmail.com. That's shamtheman73@gmail.com. You can also join my Facebook group. Just search Insane Shane's World.
So that was another great episode. Hey, Wolfie, tell them where they can find you on social media.
Jimmy, they can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. I'm just kidding. They can find me on Facebook. My personal page is Warren Wolf, W-O-L-F-E. I'm on Instagram, at WarrenWolf13.
You can always find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, at LiveWolfieD. Here's the thing. Wolfie always has offers for his autographed photos. He has a selection of some awesome photos from throughout his career that he will autograph and personalize any way that you want him to. Just contact him either directly at his personal Facebook page or through any one of our other pages, and we'll make sure you get in contact contact directly with Wolfie. Get those photos, right, Wolfie?
Yeah, I've got some good stuff on there, you know, to help with the podcast.
Folks, if you can't get out to a show to meet Wolfie D, there's nothing like that, especially for the fans of PG-13 and Wolfie D. And before we go, you can always find me, your host, Jimmy Street, at James Rock Street on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
And hey, Jimmy, before we go real quick, I just want to add in there, from the bottom of my heart, I really appreciate, first of all, the work you've done for this podcast. You have worked your butt off. Secondly, the people that are liking the page. Beyond that, even more, is the people that are listening. And we really appreciate that.
Yeah, and remember, guys, the podcast drops a new episode every Monday at noon, and our past episodes are streaming now on demand on all major podcast formats. Thanks again.
I got a cap for your dome.
He got a cap for your dome.
I got a cap for your dome.
He got a cap for your dome.
For your dome. And here we go. The original white boy that came out sagging, not bragging. Don't be hating, cause I'm spitting the truth. Still livin' in color. Don't rush your mother. Utilize a hubcap. I'm like any other. Back in the day, I was N.O.D. and I was P to the G plus the 1 and the 3. In case you forgot, they call me Wolfie D. Been cloned and copied so many times. Tired of suckers taking credit for what is mine. You know who you are without me name dropping. Wrestling's first white boy coming out hip hop. Been doing it like this since 92. Laid low for a while and you thought I was through. Listen real close to these rhymes that I've injected. This shit's so sick it makes your ears get infected. Mad skills, no faking, there is no one great. Cause I'm bringing more folks than Obi-Wan or Vader. Not here to play games, so you better beware. You don't like me, so what?
I really don't care.
Like time I keep ticking and I can't be stopped. You suck a step to the side unless you wanna get dropped. When I finish, I'll straight knock you out. Please allow me to tell you what it's all about. I'm gonna wind it up. And I'm driving it home, it's Wolfie D, baby. Huh, I got a cap for your dome.
You got a cap for your dome.
You got a cap for your dome. You got a cap for your dome.
This has been a James Rock Street production.